Introducing Minor Wisdom Quintet!
One, two, a skid-a-dee-da-do.
Minor Wisdom!
To have been the most stressful week of my entire life. One of the most stressful. I don't get into too much personal chat on here, but before we get started, I do have Dennis Maganza on. Dennis is, again, here we go with it, a stereotype, a Texas legend, if you will. I'm not going to lie, though. I didn't know much about Dennis, really anything about Dennis, until Missy Head, last week's guest, Missy Head, mentioned Dennis on her podcast during her interview as one of the people that influenced her the most and people that she admired. And so that made me reach out to Dennis, and I did that, and I said, hey, what are your thoughts? Would you like to come onto the podcast? So this is actually the last of the spring break recording sessions. So I'm going to start recording new sessions very soon and hope to have a bunch of those in the can so that this summer I can move from house to house rather seamlessly so that it doesn't sound like I'm getting interrupted on this podcast. Speaking of house to house, long story short, we put in an offer to a house and are in the option period. And because it's a contingent option, they backed out. And my wife, my wonderful, amazing, eloquent wife, who spends hours just looking at a paragraph of any sort of English paper and dissecting it. She's that kind of theater teacher, but she and I conjured up a letter. I wrote sort of the bones of it, and then she came in and put actual feeling and emotion behind it, and it worked. And so this house now that we have been trying to get, they bought our letter, and not, you know, with cash, not monetarily speaking, but they bought what we had to say because it was genuine. We're going to be moving hopefully to the Tomball area. So if you're in the Tomball area, we'll be neighbors. All right. So that'll be pretty fun. So speaking of sort of things moving, I don't know if people saw this on Facebook, but Kim Bryant, who used to be with the Texas Renaissance Festival and kind of the ones that, I don't know if she started the student days or not, but I know she was definitely one of the point persons, if you will, that all of us directors used to get all that set up. But she posted on Facebook about the Sherwood Forest Fair spelled with an E at the end, but the Sherwood Forest Fair, which is not too far from Austin. I actually have heard of the Sherwood Forest Fair. I can't say I've ever been, but they're going to be doing a student day on April 12th, 2022. So yeah, that kind of goes in there with One Act Play if you're hashtag blessed and you're still in One Act Play at that time. But for a lot of people, they won't be. So you can reach out to her. She does not know that I'm doing this at all, plugging this stuff. But, you know, I plug things. Speaking of plugging things, Summerfest. And yes, there are kids in the background. My oldest daughter has a friend here. And, you know, my youngest daughter wants to be with the big kids. So anyway, they're screaming and yelling and having a good time, but that's okay. But anyway, you know, Summerfest is just around the corner. It'll be up in Plano with TXETA. Texas Thespians again has some things going on as well. They're posting on Facebook quite often about what those things are. So you can go on and see that kind of stuff. That's really it. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate the new listeners that are here. Remember to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen, especially on iTunes, and make sure that you leave a nice, pretty review. You can reach out to me at Mr. Blake Minor on Twitter. I've been shamelessly putting my Cash App. I haven't gotten made a single dime off of this entire podcast. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to bury my Cash App and, I don't remember the other one that's in there, but Venmo, I think. And, you know, if you really like this, then, you know, shoot me 5 cents or something like that. But, you know, I'm a teacher. My wife's a teacher. We're transitioning right now from teaching wise, not, yeah. Anyway, you get it. We, you know, we're in the thick of things, and happy summer to some of you. I know you've already started. Lucky you. We are not off until June 4th. Thank you. Thank you to that freeze. Anyway, I want to thank everybody again for listening. Reach out to me on Facebook. Reach out to me on Twitter. This particular interview, again, may have some dated information in it. I don't quite remember. I don't always listen back, but again, Dennis McGanz is on, and I really appreciate him and really appreciate him trusting me to kind of just get to know him a little bit. Enjoy this week's interview.
Briefly, I started out as a jock. I was a swimmer and a water polo player. And then my parents got divorced. And I was, this is in St. Louis, and a very noted theater professor kind of got me into theater. And so I started doing theater because I could fit it into also working at a grocery store. And, you know, between those two things, I, you know, did theater and then graduated from high school and went to college. And I was just going to college to go to college. And then suddenly they said, well, you could graduate in 3 years with a theater degree. And so I said, well, that sounds good. And a lot of the people I knew had gone to the University of Minnesota and then worked at the Guthrie Theater. And so I said, well, that sounds good. And I kind of went that way. And then I did that. And as they, you know, started paying me to teach classes. And then, you know, I got called by a Texas state at that time, SWTSU, Texas Theater, you know, in Texas State. And I came down here, and then all of a sudden I was teaching theater. And that's where I met Missy, and that's where I met a lot of people. And it just kind of, you know, followed that way. You know, I did a... One of the things when I was, you know, an undergraduate in theater was discover doing mime shows. So I, you know, traveled around doing mime shows, and that became a way of making a living. And so I stopped working at the grocery store and started doing mime shows. And so it's a kind of crazy, you know, insane world where all of a sudden these things kind of mix together. I tell the story of, you know, I was originally hired to get opera singers to move. And then I was hired to get dancers to sing. And then I was got hired to get actors to do something.
Actors to do something. That's a yeah, that's good. So Missy said that you were the best movement director she'd ever had. So I guess that means that you, like you just said, you were hired to get opera singers to move and dancers to sing.
Yes.
So what was it about your ability to get the people that had one talent to get to do the other kind of talent? What is it that you brought out of them or gave them the security to know that it's okay that they tried this other side of performance?
Well, the one thing I think I learned from, I mean, a lot of my teachers was, you know, actually, in fact, when I was in graduate school, I had a great voice teacher, great movement teacher, great opera, you know, director.
Yeah.
And they were all kind of together. And I kind of went, well, you know, let's integrate. Can we integrate all this stuff? And I realized it's kind of like, you know, when people say, well, we got the mind, the voice, and the body, they're all integrated.
Right.
You know, there isn't a separation.
Right.
You know, it's all one thing. And so if you approach it like everything is together, when you breathe, it is not just the voice. It's the body. It's the, you know, everything is together. And so my approach was always, everything is integrated.
Right. Do you think your time? Do you think your time as an athlete lent itself to that same kind of integration? You know, water polo is. I could say I've tried it. I didn't succeed, but
no, you know. But no, totally. It's you know, I even go to, you know, it's more even than people say. Well, you know, spiritual.
Yeah.
Well, the mind is the body.
Right.
You know, there isn't something that separates everything. So if you put everything together, it works.
Right.
And so you're really just trying to say, let it happen.
Right.
You know, let all of the integral parts work together.
So you're in Texas now?
Yes, sir.
Where are you in Texas?
I'm in Creekview.
Okay.
Just a little north of Dallas.
Okay. So what made you stay? Well, you know, being a Midwestern guy that then ended up in Minnesota, you know, I know that recently we've had weather that would remind you of Minnesota, but you know,
it's really just kind of a place where I ended up, you know, sort of being.
Right.
And it's very comfortable.
Right.
Right. You know, and I kind of work out of here as a sort of a base.
Yeah. Yeah. That area is good. I mean, as far as if you're traveling, it's one of the best in the country. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And you know, I'm kind of in the middle of everywhere. Yeah. So, you know, it's very pleasant.
What do you miss most about St. Louis?
Well, Cardinals.
Yeah, but you can still watch them.
Yeah, you can watch them, but still, you know, there's also the hill.
Yeah, okay.
You can get good Italian food.
What about Ted Drew's?
Oh gosh. You know, I actually lived near there.
Yeah.
So when I was growing up.
Yeah, that's I have the best man from my wedding, his whole entire family's from St. Louis. So a couple of times I've visited St. Louis and stood in line for Ted Drew's, and you know,
absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
in fact, one of my last memories with a good old friend who I grew up with, and we, you know, went there and you know, ate at Ted Drew's.
Yeah, do you have a go to for that? You know, there are a lot of people that listen to this that aren't cultured, so you know they think the end all be all is Bluebell, or up in your area Brahms is, you know,
true.
Rather popular. There's a, you know, if there were a softball tournament of ice creams, I think Brahms would be the big rival of Bluebell.
Well, it, you know, Brahms Bluebell is nice, but Ted Drew's was like something special.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, if people are listening that have never had Ted Drew's and you're in the St. Louis area, and I know the Ted Drew's branches kind of go out a little bit, kind of like Brahms does, where there are a couple of locations. But anyway.
Well, I think they're like the second, you know, the first time they had the custard ice cream.
Yeah.
It's in Coney Island.
Yeah, right.
And then it moved, you know, that one of the people moved to Ted Drew's.
Right. So I jokingly told somebody a couple days ago when I was interviewing them that my mind will sometimes not go to theater, you know, talking to you about Ted Drew's or things that have nothing to do with theater might be more what people want to learn about you. So I'll get back to theater in a second, but I have to explore the Cardinals first because I'm a huge Astros fan. I was born and raised a Houston Astros fan, and we liken, up until 2016 or 17, we liken ourselves as one of the smarter fans, right? Even though we could have been smarter in 2017, I guess you could say. Why are St. Louis Cardinals fans the smartest baseball fans in the world?
And incredible dedication.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's something that I remember as a little, you know, a little guy. What, you know, getting that, we'd get the newspaper every day. And first thing I would go to is go to the sports page.
Yep.
And I'd check and see what the box score was.
Right.
And I also remember laying on my brother's bed, which was close to the window every summer, and listening to the St. Louis Cardinals on a little box radio. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so it's like that was something I did every. I was at a Stan Musial's last, you know, baseball game.
Yeah. Wow.
And so it's kind of like,
that's,
you know,
really cool.
That is, you know, it's instilled in you. In fact, I didn't live too far away from Stan Musial's home.
Oh, wow.
That was a time when, you know, a great baseball player lived in a normal,
yeah,
you know, area where, you know, you would grow up with.
Was Musial your favorite player growing up?
Probably, yeah. You know, as I was growing up, yeah. But then, you know, later on, you know, whoever was playing for St. Louis was my fan. You know, I was a
fan. So I told this story a long time ago. My claim to being historically tied to St. Louis is that I worked for the Houston Astros as a tour guide for many, many years.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
One of the perks of that was that if we went to a major league city, we could get access to a ballpark and free tours or some sort of perk, if you will. And so at St. Louis, we went to go look at the old Busch Stadium, my friend and I, the friend I spoke of earlier, Michael. And we were walking around. This is as they're building the new stadium. And we're walking around. They gave us carte blanche. They said, go wherever you'd like. It was off season, so there was no baseball happening. But said, go wherever you'd like, as long as it's not the locker room. And so we end up just kind of happenstance walking out onto the field of the new stadium as it's being built. And so I still have pictures to this day of me standing out in left field of the new stadium with construction. You know, I don't know why or how we got out there without a hard hat or, you know, but we were able to kind of just mosey on out very nonchalantly and kind of be on the field of the new ballpark. So it was kind of cool. It was a great experience for us, but yeah, that's my St. Louis story.
Absolutely beautiful. You know, I have great, great memories.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, the old ballpark.
Yeah.
Sportsman's Park.
Yeah.
That's where I first started. And then they had the new park.
Yeah.
And I remember they used to have, it was straight A tickets. As a student, if you had straight A's,
wow. Yeah.
You would get 3 tickets for the summer.
Yeah.
That's and, a great, you know, incentive. I'd get those every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd be up in way, way, way,
yeah,
far away from the, you know, from the activity, but you'd get a ticket and that was like the best thing in the world.
That's cool. That's fun. So, all right, let's switch back to theater. So you mentioned that you did mime work.
Yes.
Is that something that you kept, like your mime work that you did, it was kind of, you just happened to fall onto the mime world. Is that something you kept from up until the day you were done teaching? Is that something you, enjoyed to put into your curriculum, that mime work is,
yeah. Even until today, it's an elemental part of theater.
Yeah.
Which is understanding, just the physicality of theater.
Yeah.
It is the, you know, the heart and, you know, and soul.
Yeah.
There is language and there's movement.
Yeah.
And without language, movement carries so much.
Right. Do you feel that if you can tell a story without speaking, that the likelihood that once your mouth opens, you'll be pretty good? Or do you think one doesn't necessarily correlate with the other?
Well, no, well, they're both integrated.
Yeah.
But it's possible, like when I work in Japan, the English language doesn't work.
Right, right.
But the body does.
Right. So it's
You know, the one thing about the, you know, movement is it's, international. It is, you know, it goes beyond anything else.
Right.
And quite often it's not like a lot of movement, but it's quite simply the ability to express yourself with, you know, while we say this, like the head says something,
right.
The body says, you know, upper chest says something, pelvis says, you know, the body itself can explain, you know, this is dance.
Right. Right. Is that also like, so do you understand and teach Cirque, or not Cirque, Commedia dell'arte?
Totally. That,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something my wife is very big on as well. So, teaching the Commedia style, because if an actor understands those types of leads, if you will, leading with the pelvis, leading with the chest, the head, then they'll understand. Yeah. Yeah. So then, I took American Sign Language in college, and one of the things that the professor loved is that so many theater students took American Sign Language because they understood expression. Have you ever like gotten into that world of trying, you know, as a mime, someone that understands expression and telling a story through their body? ASL is very much that.
Well, very much so. But one of the problems is much expression really comes more from the total body.
Yeah.
More so than from just the hands.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, hands are good, but they tend to be like the end of the expression.
Right.
So if I'm angry, the anger is in me here.
Right.
And it comes out. But a lot of actors will just kind of be acting with their hands.
Yeah, indicating. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So what are you doing now?
Well, I work with a University Interscholastic League doing one act plays.
Okay.
And I work with University of Texas A&M.
Okay.
So, and I teach graduate classes in movement and directing.
How did you feel when you came to Texas in regards to the one act play system? You know, that was something that was probably, I don't want to say foreign to you. You knew what a one act play was, but the competitive side of things and, you know, all the different levels that you compete. Did you know of this when you came to Texas? And then how did you feel about it once you were here?
Well, I'm so old that when I came, it was still developing.
Right.
Okay. And so I always tell the kind of the joke that, you know, I came before they had the standard set.
Okay.
That they now use.
Yeah. What did that?
I was brand new.
Yeah. Shame on me for not knowing, but what were they using? You could just build anything, huh?
Right. Yeah. In fact, you know, when I came, I was one of the reasons why they started the clinic rule.
Okay.
When you bring someone in, they need to, you know, you need to have three people,
right,
or three plays,
right,
in clinic, and that, because I was going around doing clinics and, you know, trying to do different things. So I was very early on in the situation,
right,
and it's really evolved in a, you know, a very different kind of way. But when I came to Texas, it was, you know, and I think there's still, you know, there's still kind of an element of, you know, Texas is kind of Texas doing one act plays. And I'm always trying to say, look outside,
right,
look, you know, there, you know, tons of stuff going on around the country.
Right.
You know, let's see what we can bring in and steal.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's the basis of theater and education is steal it and
totally
adapt it. Yeah. Yeah. Which always bothers me when somebody says, all their show was a ripoff of this other show. It's like, well, maybe portions of it, but you know, it definitely wasn't completely a ripoff considering they didn't have the same actors. So, you know,
well, yeah, in fact, I did, you know, I kind of heard people saying, well, oh my heavens, they're doing a redapt of another show.
Right.
Well, that's what happens.
Right.
That's, you know, where things come from. Now, hopefully that you redapt it and add something to make it different.
Right. You want to, yeah, definitely. You don't want to completely rip it off. Now, when you came here, to Texas, and I know you jokingly, but also, I guess I'm not going to ask you your age. I would never do that, but, you jokingly say, you know, you're old enough to remember before the unit set, and that's true. That's not a joke. But what has been, besides some of the obvious meaning the unit set, and maybe I don't know what the time frame was back then, if it was still 7 setup, 47, that kind of thing. What has been one of the biggest changes that you've seen with the One Act Play system? And then what is a change that you think we could still maybe work on?
Well, the biggest change is the technology is okay. Incredible.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's amazing what you can do with lights and, you know, the set and everything. But one of my problems I have is people are so preoccupied with that.
Right.
That they're missing, you know, the heart of a show, which is the, you know, the actors.
Right.
And so, yeah, in the 40 years I've been doing this, technology is great, but we're still facing the exact same problems of helping the young actor to act.
Right.
That's the heart of the matter. You know, the performer is number one.
Right.
No matter what.
Right.
And unless you're doing, Samuel, Beckett's, Breath.
Yeah.
Where there's nothing but a, sound of breathing on the stage. You need to have the actors.
Right.
And so I always, and maybe this goes back to my mime, the heart of the matter is an actor in with one light on him can perform an entire play.
Right.
And so it's like, where are the actors? What are they doing? How are the young people developing as actors?
Yeah. So how has your style changed now that you've spent almost a year teaching digitally, teaching online? Have you, do you step back from your camera, or are you watching kids perform and then critiquing, or both? Or what has kind of changed in your way of teaching during this kind of odd time? However, some of this might continue as far as how we continue to teach post-pandemic. You might sit in the Dallas area and teach in College Station. You know what I mean?
No, the one thing I've learned is it opened my mind up.
Yeah.
When I was first hired to teach online, I kind of thought, well, you can't do this.
Right.
You got to be there personally, and you got to grab them and, manipulate and make things happen.
Right.
And what I really realized is the people I work with or the students I work with, I don't have to be there.
Right.
It's not impossible to do this.
Right.
And so I've kind of learned to step back a little bit and let things happen, in the world they're in.
Right.
So there's a bit of a separation to it, but it's really changed my mind. When I first started, I kind of thought this is impossible.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I can do this. And now I believe, no matter what the situation is, this is what the arts are.
Right.
Yeah. You expand, you open, and you see what can happen. It may not be what you want it to be, but it can be.
Yeah. It's still a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though I'm not there, we can work together and we can do things.
Yeah. What is your one of, you don't have to narrow it down to one, but if you can, what is one of your greatest happy memories as an educator? One, maybe it was watching a kid that you had, seen come through the ranks and succeed, or a show that was produced really well that you maybe had doubts about, or I'm completely way off and you have something else, but what is one of the greatest memories, happy memories that you have as an educator?
Hard to answer that because, there are a lot of little, and I would say the thing, a lot of little moments.
Yeah.
little moments where you kind of go, okay, wow, you know, that, you know, that worked, or that person, you know, did better, or, you know, they changed, or, you know, I, you know, have a student where, you know, if he, you know, didn't get C's, he couldn't be in the class. You know, right. And, you know, something as simple as I always say this, the important thing about theater is this: anyone can get into theater. Anyone can get into the theater. Now, if you want to get in the choir, you got to sing.
Yeah.
You want to get in the marching band, you got to play something. You want to get in the football team, you better hit somebody. But in theater, you can walk in and say, I just want to be here.
Yeah.
And you discover something that can keep you there, whether it becomes a technician or an actor or a costumer or something. But I've, you know, you find young people who can come into the theater and they find a place. Yeah. And then they begin to grow and they find a talent. So the great thing about theater is you can find a talent in yourself. And that to me is what, you know, what makes it really worthwhile. Now, you also need to find your talent and grow.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just come into theater and, you know, I can't do anything else.
Yeah.
In fact, I often say that, are you in theater because you can't do anything else? You know?
Yeah.
You know, if you could hit somebody, you'd be in football.
Yeah, right. What is it that you're doing now at Texas A&M?
Well, I teach graduate classes.
Okay.
In directing and movement. Okay. Online.
Yeah. And is that something, because I know Texas A&M, the undergrad program has kind of morphed into more of a performance. It's not necessarily a theater acting undergrad anymore. I mean, I know it may come back or whatever, but with the grad students, are you finding that some of those grad students that come into Texas A&M, are they there for the right reasons? Does that make sense? You know, are they there knowing that they're going to go into theater as they leave, or are they there as performance-based? Does that make sense? You know, it kind of makes sense in my head.
The majority of them are teachers.
Okay, okay.
And what they're doing is, you know, looking to advance. So it's not like it's not like if you went to the University of Minnesota.
Right, right.
Where you are performance-oriented, right. And, you know, you're going into the professional world.
Right. Has that been a whole new world for you, teaching teachers?
No.
No.
Okay. I've been doing that for a long time.
Okay.
I honestly, I've been, you know, there were years ago at Southwest Texas, you know, I had a teacher's program, which was designed in the summer,
right,
for people who were given UIL one-act plays and had no theater background.
Gotcha.
So they would come for a week and I would train them to get ready to do a UIL play.
So kind of like the English teacher at a small school type of thing.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, that's still happening now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
We still have, you know, people who are given the UIL, you know, one act play to do.
Right.
Did
you find when you were at Southwest Texas, Texas State, did you find that you had a grand spectrum of those types of teachers that were either A, bitter that their administration had given this to them, or B, totally hungry and ready and very receptive? Do you remember which side of the spectrum you had more of?
Well, honestly, most of them were just kind of uncertain.
Okay.
They didn't have an opinion. They just kind of went, my God, they gave me this.
I got you. You know,
what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And so most of them were very open. In fact, a large number of them ended up being very successful, right, in theater.
Right.
Simply because they, you know, they said, okay, well, no, I'll do the job you've given me.
Right. Was that your idea? Was that something that you wanted to do? Or is that just something that you started doing? Like, is it teaching teachers that just kind of by happenstance fell into this world of becoming theater artists?
I honestly wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Because I kind of felt like, as a growing up the way I did, I understood, you're given a situation and you can either make it work or not.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of people were given the situation and they wanted to make it work.
Right.
And so for me, it was actually a lot of fun. And I liked helping people.
Right.
I'm really sorry, but the arts are not that big of a deal.
Right.
It's kind of like, this is such a magical thing that we're walking into. No, it isn't.
Yeah.
It's a very practical, functional kind of thing that you handle. When Michelangelo was up painting the Sistine Chapel,
right.
He was painting with colors. And, it was a structure and a function.
Right.
And it's something you can teach. And so my biggest thing is the arts is something you can teach. Now, where you go beyond that is up to you. But it's kind of like, I can teach you to swim. I can teach you to play water polo. All right. But the next step is up to you. Are you going to be great or not?
Minor.